And John 12:27, this is the word of God. Let's listen to him. Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, but for this purpose I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice came from heaven, I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. The crowd that stood there and heard it said that it sounded like thunder. Others said, an angel has spoken to him. Jesus answered, this voice has come for your sake, not mine. Now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. He said this to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So the crowd answered him, we have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. How can you say that the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Jesus said to them, the light is among you for a little while longer. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. The one who walks in darkness does not know where he is going. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become sons of light. When Jesus had said these things, he departed and hid himself from them. Though he had done so many signs before them, they still did not believe in him. So that the words spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. Lord, who has believed what he has heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Therefore, they could not believe. And again, Isaiah said, he has blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, lest they see with their eyes and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and spoke of him. Nevertheless, many, even the authorities, believed in him, but for the fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God.
Good morning, everyone. You've already been told that this is part of our series called See God. We're just working through John's Gospel, and we'll be doing so till close to Christmas. So I'm going to pray, and we'll look at this passage together. Father, it seems to us that the death of Jesus Christ happened a very long time ago. Because it happened so long ago, we have to keep reminding ourselves. We get used to these things. But Father, there is no time before you. Christ is crucified before you now. He stands in glory, a lamb, triumphant as though it had been slain. Please will you, through your word, help us to see afresh Christ and him crucified. Help us to glory in the cross. Father, help us to think like you. For our good and for your glory we pray it. Amen. It's very interesting to read about the death of other religious leaders. If you look at the founders of other religions and you go read about their death, it's very interesting. You can learn a lot. In fact, it's not just religion. You can read about the death of Aristotle or people like that. It's very interesting. You learn a lot. So how about this? Here's a couple of thoughts for you. Buddha. Do you know how Buddha died? The founder of Buddhism. He died 80 years old, actually, and he died peacefully and serenely. It was a very calm death. He passed away. He had a couple of followers around him. He said a few things which are recorded for us. One of his last words to his followers were, he said to them, work hard and earnestly for your salvation. And he died peacefully. Which teaches me that his death added nothing to what he offers the world. His death is not part of his teaching. They're not related. There's nowhere where Buddha says, look to my death. There's nowhere where the Buddha says, my death accomplishes this. Nothing like that at all. In other words, he died a victim, like you, like me. It's like any one of us. He just died. Everyone dies. The Buddha died. End of story. Muhammad's death is a little bit more interesting. We know a lot about Muhammad's death. There's lots of Islamic sources about how Muhammad died. He died after being poisoned by a Jewish slave girl. He didn't know he was going to die. He was completely caught by surprise, utterly shocked. He was surprised that he was poisoned. What had happened, actually, if you want to know the background, he had just conquered a Jewish settlement, and what he did was he beheaded a number of people, as Muhammad often did. He beheaded a whole lot of people who had resisted, and he captured some girls and made them his slave. One of them, a Jewish girl, cooked him a goat. Actually, we're not sure what meat it was. There's some debate, but according to Islamic sources, most of them say it was goat's meat. But she poisoned it. And when Muhammad ate it and realized that he had been poisoned, he had the slave girl brought to him, and he asked her, why did you do this? This is what she said. I wanted to know if you are true. In that case, Allah will surely inform you. And if you are a liar, I shall relieve the people of you. That's in the Islamic sources. Then, when he knew he was going to die, Muhammad and the angel Gabriel begged God that he wouldn't die. He took cupping, he had blood taken from him. And when he finally died, he died, unlike Buddha, he died furious, screaming, ranting and calling down curses on Jewish people and Christians. Jesus' death is very different. It is beyond description how to, first of all, Jesus did not die like Buddha, calm and serene. Look at verse 27. Jesus said, now is my soul troubled. Jesus died a death of anguish. There was no serenity. There was no calm. Jesus did not die like Muhammad. He was not surprised. We are in John chapter 12. His death's only coming up later. But already he's talking about it. It's not a surprise to him. But above all else, here's the key thing you have to grasp. Buddha's death and Muhammad's death do not achieve anything. They don't claim it achieves anything. It just ends a very eventful life. Buddha dies, as I said to you, saying to his followers, work out your own salvation with diligence. Hear this. Jesus Christ's death achieves everything. Everything. If Christ had not died, his life would have been in vain. Jesus Christ's death is his victory. It flings open the doors of salvation. It unlocks everything that you and I sitting this morning could dream about. It is open to us. Everything we could wish for is all achieved through Jesus Christ's death. And we got one point this morning, and here it is. Our series, See God, today, see God lifted up. And here's the point. Jesus being lifted up is his victory over the world, the ruler of this world, and the people of this world. And it's all there in this passage for you. And then at the end, we'll look quickly at how should we respond. So, Jesus being lifted up is his victory over the world, the ruler of this world, and the people of this world. Look with me in verse 27. Now is my soul troubled. The word is just so rich. There is bitter anguish here. Who can ever comprehend this? Look again. Now is my soul troubled. This is your God. And his soul is troubled. There is mental agony, exquisite pain in that statement. Who can ever comprehend? Why do you think it's troubled? Well, I can think of three reasons. First of all, perhaps this. He's about to be rejected by everybody. I don't go to parties where I'm not wanted. I can't handle rejection. I just don't go. Jesus is going to go where everybody will reject him, where he will be hated, despised. His disciples will run away and disown him. No wonder his soul is troubled. He's going to be man alone. Maybe that's why his soul's troubled. Well, there's more. Maybe it's the pain. I'm allergic to pain. I come out in noise all over. You know, maybe it's the pain. Imagine you're going to have a big operation. And you think to yourself, oh, tomorrow I've got an ingrown toenail. And they're going to come. Will I be able to cope? Ah, they'll give me painkillers. I'm still nervous because I hate anesthetic and all that. But they'll give me painkillers, and those are lots of fun. Think about Jesus. He knows what they're going to do to him. They're going to put nails through my wrists, through my ankle. Many victims died of the flogging alone. He must have been terrified. Can I do this? Am I really going to go through with this? My soul is troubled. But I don't think those are the main reasons. Here's the main reason. My soul is troubled. Here's why. Jesus Christ is going to be divided from the Father. There is going to be a separation, not in the being of God, because that's not possible, but there is going to be a separation between the persons of God, between the Father and the Son. And this is beyond all comprehension that it should come to this. Because before all eternity, the Father and the Son and the Spirit have enjoyed the most exquisite intrapersonal love forever. And now it's going to break up. And breaking up is never easy. Jesus is going to be abandoned by the Father. And he knows it. No wonder my soul is troubled. But it's more than just separation anxiety. This is Jesus who's going to walk up and face the Holy God. He's going to face the Holy God carrying the sin of the world on his shoulders. I have to say to you, we don't have time, but about a month ago we were at Woodvale Baptist, we looked at Isaiah 6, because this is the background to this passage. And we looked at this. Do you remember Isaiah's response when he saw the Holy, Holy, Holy One on the throne? Isaiah said, "Woe is me, I'm undone." He literally fell apart at the seam. Jesus is going to walk up carrying the sin of the world on his shoulders. No wonder he says, "Now is my soul troubled." Have you ever been in mental anguish? Have you? You ever been in a tortured state of mind? Jesus is for you. I commend Jesus to you. Because he really knows. How can you not see? Now is my soul troubled. Ooh, that's a God for me. Buddha is no help to you. Because he doesn't know what it's like to be in a state of mental turmoil. This Jesus, he's for you. And look what he says. Now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? I would never have guessed. Jesus, speechless. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. What shall I say? I know. I'll ask God to save me. I'll ask God to save me. That's what Muhammad did. No. No, look what Jesus says. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, but for this purpose I have come to this hour. This is the point of my life. This is why I agreed, before the world began, to take on human flesh. This is why I said yes. I signed up that I would be born of a virgin. I came to the world for this day. When I was with the Father for eternity, you can't crucify me because I'm in glory. I need to become a man, a body, so that you can crucify me. This is why I'm on earth. I didn't come to be a healer. I didn't come to settle the world's politics. I didn't come as a teacher only. I did teach. That wasn't my main thing. Verse 27, I came to die. Now is my soul troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, but for this purpose I have come to this hour. Why? Why are you so determined to die? Look at verse 28. Father, glorify your name. There's your answer. Jesus Christ is single-minded. He has one focus, for the Father to be glorified. That's why he wants to die. What he's saying is, whatever it takes for the Father to be glorified, that I will do. And Jesus is saying, if I must achieve the Father's glory by being crucified, count me in. That's what I'll do. Have you ever heard the saying, the end justifies the means? It's not always true, and it's not always false, actually. It depends, I guess, what the ends are, you know, what the means are. What is the goal of Jesus Christ? His goal is God's glory. And if that's the goal, then the ends justify the means. The means, whatever it takes for God to be glorified, whatever it takes. For Jesus, that was death. And Jesus is saying, if God is to be glorified, then I will die. For that is the highest goal. What would you choose? God's glory or your comfort? Which would be nice if it could be both. Oh, you have to choose another religion. Because in this one, the way God is glorified is through Christ's death and our suffering for him. Your sickness, could it be that your sickness leads to him being glorified? And is that worth it? Because that's what happened to Lazarus just earlier on. Would you be happy with that? For Jesus, whatever it takes, anything is worth it for God to be glorified. He might be torn apart physically, but in his heart, there's no division. One purpose. Earth is worth it. Heaven is worth it. And hell is worth it. He should know he's about to undergo it. And in his acute distress, in that mental anguish, Jesus prays to God, not save me, but Father, in this, be glorified. Which tells me that Jesus knows something about God we don't. What does Jesus know about God that we don't? That for Jesus, anything is worth it for God to be glorified. In other words, God must be that good. God must be that glorious. God must be that worthy. That anything is worth sacrificing for his glory. Really? If anything is worth sacrificing for God's glory, then that tells you something about God, and Jesus knows it. Well, what's God's response? Look at verse 28. Then a voice came from heaven. I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. What is God's response to Jesus' prayer? Jesus' prayer, Father, glorify your name. God's response is, I did. I am. I will. The answer is yes. Jesus is praying according to the will of God the Father. Not heal me, not saved me, be glorified. And God says, yes. And immediately God answers, yes. Here's a tip. Write this down quickly. Quick tip number, wherever we are. Do you want God to always say yes to your prayers? Guaranteed. Do you want God to always say yes to your prayers? Then pray this, that in everything, no matter what, he will glorify himself. Guaranteed yes. And what is God's glory in this situation? In the impending imminent death of Jesus, what is God's glory? And that's where we come to the heart of our passage. Have a look with me at verse 29. Verse 28, a voice came from heaven. I've glorified it. I will glorify it again. Interestingly, there are three times we hear this voice in John's gospel from heaven. When Jesus Christ was baptized, not in John's gospel, in the gospels. When Jesus was baptized at the Mount of Transfiguration and just before the cross. In those three spectacular moments in the life of Jesus, God the Father endorses Jesus in front of other people. So look what happens, verse 29. The crowd that stood there heard it said, they heard it, said that it had thundered. Others said an angel has spoken to him. Jesus answered, this voice has come for your sake, not mine. I don't need assurance. You need assurance. Now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. And I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself. He said this to show by what kind of death he was going to die. Listen, God's glory is established in the death of Jesus Christ. Hear this. God is most glorified when Jesus Christ is crucified. Why? Because God wins. That's why. Because God wins. Because Jesus' death is God's victory over three things, and they're all there for you. First of all, Jesus being lifted up is his victory over the world. Look at verse 31. Now is the judgment of this world. Jesus Christ's death judges the world. And it's so ironic because the world thinks it was passing judgment on Jesus. When these people will shout out, crucify him, crucify him, it looks as if the world is judging Jesus. He's the one on the cross, not us. And yet, Jesus says, no, my death judges the world. It's the other way around. And even today, people are still thinking they judge. This is how people think. I wonder if Jesus is true. Should I worship him? I wonder if Jesus is really better than sex. I wonder if Jesus is really better than money. What are you doing when you do that? You're passing judgment on him. You're making a decision. But at the cross, Jesus says it gets reversed. At the cross, God passes judgment on the world. At the cross, we see nothing matters more than Jesus Christ. At the cross, sin, this is the judgment on the world, sin is shown to be the evil that it really, really is. If sin can lead to Jesus being crucified, how bad is sin? I didn't think it was that bad, to be honest with you, until I look at the cross. That's where I see God's judgment on the world. You might be sitting here this morning going, oh, people aren't that bad. Really? Have a look again at the cross. This, look at the cross. Look at Jesus Christ being crucified. That is what people will do to God if they get half a chance. The cross is God's judgment on the world. The best thing, the collective idea of humanity, the best thing humanity can come up with is crucify the Son of God. How does this judgment work? You say, look what Jesus says there. Now is the judgment of the world. How? How does the cross judge the world? Here's how. Because the cross, maybe I can give it to you in these terms, it's like a giant laser beam. It divides humanity between those who embrace the cross, lay down their lives at the foot of the cross, and those who think the cross is irrelevant and reject the cross. Every word, every deed, every action, every intention of every human heart, in every age, in every race, in every culture, will be held up and judged in the light of the cross. Imagine you tell a lie. Imagine you tell a lie. I know it's hard to imagine, but imagine you do. Just one lie. Wasn't even that bad, but it was a lie. It doesn't look bad, does it? But imagine on that day you're standing there with your soul naked, exposed to him who's seated on the throne, who can see everything. And immediately your conscience is telling you, he knows, he knows, he knows. Now think to yourself, what ruler, what standard, what measurement will judge you? This is what you're thinking. I told a lie, but whew, I think I'm okay. Because what I did was 32 other good things. So I should, this one, I think I got this one. I think I got this one. And then you look up and you see the cross. And you see there the man crucified who never told a lie, ever, ever in his life. And you look up and you see Christ crucified and you realize the hideousness of one lie. In other words, the cross judges us. It exposes our sinfulness. It exposes evil for what it really is. If Jesus had never been crucified, Auschwitz, Dachau, the Second World War, tell me that people are bad. But now that Christ has been crucified, wow, now I know how bad we really are. And myself too. Jesus being lifted up is his victory over the world because the cross judges the world. Not only that, look at this. It carries on. Verse 31, now is the judgment of the world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. The second thing his cross achieves is his victory over the ruler of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. Dethroned. At the cross, Satan was dethroned. He's no longer in charge. He is absolutely expelled. At the cross, Jesus Christ absorbed everything that Satan threw at him. Maybe this picture will help you. I don't know if it will, but I just jumped into my head. It's like Satan is like a defeated boxer who's thrown everything at Jesus, and he's kicked and punched everything. He is absolutely exhausted. He's hanging on the ropes, more like I'm thinking of a parent with, you know, when you put your hand on their head and they're swinging these haymakers, and you just stand there. Whatever picture works for you. The point is, Satan has thrown absolutely everything at Jesus. There's nothing left in the tank. And Jesus Christ has emerged victorious. The accuser, the guy who hates Dwayne and hates you and accuses us before the Father, has thrown everything at Jesus and he's absorbed it all. And now he's hanging on the ropes and he's saying this. He's panting. He's breathing heavily. He's defeated. And he's saying this. I won. I won. Because that's all he can do. He breathes out lies. Satan's not unconscious. He has only one power left, according to Jesus, and that's to tell lies. And he never stops telling lies. But he is defeated. It's a great sadness in Christianity that a small number of Christians, mostly dying out, I think, believe that one day in the future, Jesus will defeat Satan. But sadly, right now, Satan's in control of this planet. Not according to verse 31. Jesus on the cross threw Satan out. The ruler of this world has been cast out. And you might be sitting there thinking, well, but whoa, whoa, whoa. If Satan's not in charge, why is this planet so bad? And the answer is people. People. people make it some. How long before we believe the Bible's very clear teaching that people are the problem? People are bad. People are the problem. And Satan fuels their sin by lying and telling untruths about the gospel. If you don't think people are that bad, look again at the cross. But thanks be to God. At the cross, Jesus won a great victory over people. And that's the third thing. At the cross, Jesus is lifted up. He has victory over the world, the ruler of this world, and lastly, the people of this world. Look at what it says there in verse 31. Now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. Verse 32, and I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself. He said this to show by what kind of death he was going to die. Verse 32 tells me that through the cross, Jesus draws people to himself. All over the world, everywhere, from every tribe, language, nation, tongue, for the last 2,000 years, since the cross, Jesus Christ has been drawing people to himself. You are witnesses. You know, I was thinking the other day, we were talking about the grand final, forgive me, but I just remember chatting to the staff. Did you see the grand final? Well, there was no Western Australian side, so who cares, but bear with me. So there's a grand final, and they've got the Killers, and it's at the MCG, and it's 100,000 people. And you look at that, you think, that's so impressive. Do you think that's impressive? Look how they can draw a crowd, 100,000 people, it's going mental, half of Australia, more than that's watching it. Let me tell you about Jesus. I'll show you how great he is. Each and every Sunday in Australia, this crucified Jesus draws more than 100,000 people to himself across Australia every Sunday. And he doesn't have the Killers to kick off. He's got average bands, weak leaders, poor preachers, bad venues across Australia, and he draws them every Sunday by his cross. That's impressive. And think about it. Think how small Israel was. Israel was tiny. In fact, they weren't all Israel that were Israel, because most of them were apostate. But finally, it boiled down to Jesus and 12 fishermen until he was crucified. And from the moment he was lifted up, he began to draw people. And it's gone mental. And it's all over the world. Can you think of a country where there aren't Christians? Do you know, I was reading the other day in North Korea. How bad is North Korea? No. Did you know they estimate about 90,000 Bible-believing Christians imprisoned in North Korea? The cross has drawn them. Let's play a game. Think of a country where Islam is illegal. No, I can't think of one either, actually. Think of a country where Christianity is illegal. Oh, there are so many. And in spite of that, he's still drawing people to himself everywhere. The cross is Jesus Christ's victory over people. Look at verse 32. And I, when I'm lifted up, if the music's good and the venue's okay, will draw people. That's just me being lifted up. I will draw people to myself. Can you think of any other belief system anywhere in the world where the adherents are attracted by the death of the founder? Now, when you look at those things, no wonder John uses that wonderful ambiguity. Verse 32, when I'm lifted up from the earth, I'll draw all people to myself. He said this to show by what kind of death he was going to die. Can you see the ambiguity? So clever. Lifted up refers to Jesus being crucified. But it's a deliberate pun, because it's there where he's exalted. He's lifted up. It's there where he's glorified. The cross of Jesus Christ is not his moment of shame. It's his moment of glory. The Father is glorified. That's why we sing forever. He is glorified. At the cross, let me put it as plainly as I can. At the cross, God wins. And he has for you and me. Friends, this is Christianity. Think. At the cross, God wins. But if you're a Christian, it's your victory too. This is where you're part of it. If you're a Christian and you're clinging to Jesus and his cross, his victory is your victory at the cross. This morning, I'm inviting you to stare again at something you've looked at before. I know. Look at it again. At the cross, your sin was dealt with. You sit here and you've got guilt and you're thinking, well, God, I know God's forgiven 98% of my sins, but you know those two there, they're pretty hard for God to forgive. Silly you. At the cross, his victory over your sin is complete. At the cross, your death is done. You're done. At the cross, your death is done. He died it for you. At the cross is your victory over the world. I'm asking you a genuine question. What can this world do to you? Look what it did to your substitute Jesus, and he went through it. It's done. At the cross is your victory over the world. At the cross is your life's calling. Die to yourself. Live for him who died for you. That is Christianity. I guess I should close by saying this. It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. You're never going to believe this. Would you believe that some people think this life is more important than Jesus Christ's death? I mean, would you believe that? Some people think that life here and now is more important than Jesus' death. And that's what our passage shows us. In our passage are two reasons to reject the cross. The first reason is unfulfilled expectations. Look at verse 34. So the crowd answered him, "We've heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. How can you say that the Son of Man must be lifted up?" Who's the Son of Man? I'm not going to go into it in detail, but they're getting category confused. We wanted you to be the Christ. Now you call yourself the Son of Man, you can say you've been lifted up. Ah, so there must be two different people. That's the way they're thinking. But whatever, the point is this. We don't like a crucified Christ. Can we have another Christ, please? We want the Christ who's going to bash the Romans, who's going to rule over us forever so that we can have our best life now. That's the Christ we want. We want a Christ who will get rid of all our problems. We want a Christ who will make us all princes and princesses. We want a Christ who will promote us and glorify us. And you're going to die on a cross? That's not the kind of leader we had in mind. Unfulfilled expectations. And Jesus says to them, well, he just says, "You're in darkness, really." I don't know if he gets exasperated, but look what he says in verse 35. So Jesus said to them, "The light is among you for a little while. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you." One who walks in darkness doesn't know where he's going. If you don't get my cross, you're still in darkness. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become sons of the light. Jesus Christ says to them, "Leave your darkness behind. Come to me. I am the light." Jesus says, "Leave your unfulfilled expectations behind." Jesus says, "Take the life that you imagine for yourself, kiss it goodbye, and follow me." Let go of what you dreamed for yourself in the light of me dying for you. Let it go. And the second reason not to accept the cross is simply hard hearts. I'm going to go very quickly through this. We looked at this. You can go online. The talk is there for you. We looked at this about a month ago. But look what Jesus says. When Jesus had said these things, verse 36, he departed and hid himself from them. Why is Jesus playing hide and seek? He hides from people who don't want to hear about the cross. You don't want to hear about me. I'll hide from you. The little bit you have heard, I'll take away from you. It's a great warning. Because though he had done so many signs before them, still they didn't believe him. So that the word spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. Lord, who has believed what he heard from us? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? That's the preacher's prayer on a Monday. Who believed? Wonderfully, if you read later in Isaiah 52, there's an answer. They will believe. But that's another subject. Therefore, they could not believe. For again, Isaiah said, he has blinded their eyes, hardened their hearts, lest they see with their eyes, understand with their heart, turn, and I would heal them. Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and spoke of him. Do you remember when we looked at this? When Isaiah gets that vision of the glory of God, it is Jesus that he's looking at. Do you know what the thing about Jesus' dazzling glory is? Is that when Isaiah saw Jesus' dazzling glory, he broke down, confessed, he turned. But Jesus' dazzling glory will blind other people, and they won't want to see anymore. Verse 42, nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in him, but for fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. Here's the heart of the matter. Will you receive the glory that comes from a God crucified? Or would you prefer the praise of this world? So hard. Let me ask parents. Parents, do you want successful children? Or do you want godly children? Seldom can you have both. Which one would you prefer? Would you prefer the glory of this life? The accolades. Calvin's got a great line here. He talks about the shackles of earthly honors. Verse 43 is worth ending on. They loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. Which is it for you? One of the reasons to reject the cross is to prefer the world's affirmation rather than God's approval. Hard call. Unfulfilled expectations. Seeking the glory now. Those are two reasons in our passage to reject the cross. Well, I'm going to let you think about those things. Matt did mention, we're happy, text in a question or two. We'll take a few questions. But I'm going to give you a few moments to pray, to ask God to help you to see the cross again, afresh, and glory in the cross. Jesus said, now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. And I, when I am lifted from the earth, will draw all people to myself. Lord Jesus, we beg you. Here is a bunch of people, and me too. Will you draw us to yourself by the cross? I'm not praying for those who aren't yet Christians. I'm praying for all of us, Christian or non-Christian. Draw us again by the cross to yourself. Amen.